Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium-iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Support for this podcast is provided by Subchuck Law. Revolution Recap thanks Subchuck Law for their support of our show, local independent media, and their mission of bringing unbiased truth. Revolution Recap would also like to thank Six Point Builders for their support. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap. The Revs open their 2024 CONCACAF Champions Cup campaign with a solid 1-0 win in Panama over Independiente. The Revs could have won by a larger margin. They outshot their opponents 21-10 and had 66% possession. But regardless, they have put themselves in a good position to advance to the second round. I'm Greg Johnstone. Joining me today in his first post-game podcast is Tom Pinzoni. Tom, how are you today?
Doing great. You know, we had an entertaining game, got a good result, some outstanding commentary, and we get to watch it on a streaming app that we didn't have to pay any money for, in addition to the money that we already spend to watch soccer as it is. So all in all, it's a pretty good Wednesday night.
Yeah, and I don't know why we're paying $15 a month for Apple TV when the best broadcast of the year is on a free TV service that I didn't learn about until today. Tubi, I'm a big Tubi guy. Big fan of that product, and I'm definitely going to be checking out. Before the game, I was watching a baseball game from the mid-2000s. It was Cardinals-Cubs, Matt Morris versus Sean Estes. Those are some real old players that I haven't thought of in 15 years, and I loved every moment of it. So big fan of Tubi. Also a great night for me betting-wise. I bet the under 2.5 goals and under 1.5 goals line, and I bet that at BetOnline. BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all of your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year, as well as CONCACAF Champions Cup. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs. I guess this is NBA playoffs, but it's also the Champions Cup with in-live betting contests and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop and your mobile devices. So head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use our promo code BLEAV, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is promo code BLEAV, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, the game starts here. And the season started here tonight. A phenomenal game, phenomenal result for the Revolution. A lot of questions after a very rough preseason, to put it one way. Zero wins in preseason, but they have a good enough result to start 1-0 in their Champions Cup. Tom, let's get to our key takeaways, which are brought to us by our friends at The Rebellion. Go to anyrebellion.org to learn more about them and how you can become a member for this upcoming season. But Tom, what was your key takeaway from tonight's game?
Look, the key takeaway is that, you know, like you said, you know, we can stop worrying about the preseason now. We can, you know, we can put it in the past. And I think as soon as the preseason is not the part of the season that we're in, everyone regains the perspective of these games are not particularly important. The results are not important. You know, it's a new coach trying to implement a new style of play. And, you know, the whole squad gets changed out at halftime for most of those games. And, you know, it's just, there's nothing else to really kind of latch on to. So you latch on to anything you can. And then as soon as the season gets started, you know, they dominated the game in all the categories you would want them to dominate in. And, you know, they scored a goal, which was everyone's, you know, biggest concern. They could have had two or three more possibly. So I'm happy that we're in an actual season now and we can leave the preseason where everybody wants to leave it, which is behind us.
Now, I think some people too will say 1-0 game. You know, this is a team that, truth be told, I knew nothing about them coming into this competition. I still don't know a ton about them, but I could kind of tell that there is a bit of a talent gap. Do you feel that 1-0 scoreline, is it disappointing? I know we're talking about kind of the underlying stats, but to me, I think they kind of took care of business and this is a job well done. You kind of come away not conceding on the road, getting the W. But I think a lot of people are going to feel like this is a bit of a letoff. Do you agree with that?
No, it's first game of the season. Independiente is in their fifth game of the season. And look, we can sit here and say, oh, well, it's the Panamanian League and this, that, and the other, but like you said, no one knows anything about the Panamanian League or this team. So you can write them off and dismiss them. Obviously, there was a bit of a talent gap. But look, it's a knockout competition tournament. So the objective is get a lead. Any type of competition like this, the goal is the away leg, get a goal and don't concede. And that's exactly what they did. They can find their way back to New England over the next 8 days. And they put themselves in a good position to advance to the next round. And that's all that matters in these knockout competitions is, you know, win, advance, and just keep going and see if you can get all the way to the end.
Mm-hmm. And I'll also say, too, I think it was important for them to come away with a clean sheet. It's Ravas's debut. And really, I think if you keep a clean sheet, there's really no reason you could advance, even if this ended 0-0. The Revs, this should be one-way traffic next week with the Revolution. They should win by multiple goals. So as long as they kept it in a low-scoring affair, I would have been happy, and I think that would have been a job done. But they did a little bit more than that, where they really, after the first few minutes, there were some kind of shaky moments, but they really didn't give any clear-cut chances. There were really no good chances at all. A couple of sloppy turnovers that led to some fast breaks that they recovered on, but for the most part, the Revs took care of business on the defensive side. So even though it can be cleaned up a little bit on the offensive side of things, I think they did okay. I'm going to kind of go to a different place for my key takeaway. And I was not thrilled when I saw Nacho Gil starting over Esmir. I think this is the year of Esmir. I think this is Esmir's breakout year. I think everyone is excited for him to make that next step. And I believe Caleb Porter said he was going to be the starting right winger going into the season. Nacho Gil gets the start here today. Originally, I was a little, I understand it's a CONCACAF game. Maybe you don't want to send a young player out there. You might want to save him for the DC United game. You don't want to load him up on minutes too early in the season. I kind of understand that, but I was a little disappointed Nacho got the start, and Nacho proved me wrong. A great secondary assist to Vrioni on that long ball that Vrioni flicked on to Chancalay. That was a great play. Nacho had two runs in the first half. One of them was cut out by the defense, but another one, he was straight on goal. Bit of a bad touch. We can kind of blame the field for that one. It seemed like he just couldn't really control that. But if he controls that, he's got a clear shot on goal, and he's probably going to score as well. 85% pass accuracy. He had 49 touches in about 63 minutes. Seven recoveries. He was 8 for 12 on ground duels, and he also was fouled 5 times. He had a pretty solid impact in the game, and for a guy that I think a lot of people thought of being a backup player, not someone who you really want in the starting lineup and is probably going to be depth later on when Dylan Barrero comes back, I thought he had a great game, and I thought he was a bit of a game changer in this one.
I was a little surprised that Nacho started, but like you said, I think there's a little bit of wanting to protect Esmir and not have him out there from a start, not knowing how these type of games can go, how physical was it going to be. You saw a couple of players get hacked down in the first half. The game never really got out of control, but in those types of away game situations, it's always a possibility. So I think it was probably just being a little safe and just kind of keep the young kid out there. Easy way to get yourself kicked all over the field is being 18-year-old trying to show people up. That usually doesn't go over too well. And I think you can see Nacho's experience. I'm sure Nacho, back in Spain has come up against plenty of tough defenders, and he clearly knew how to handle himself. He got on the ball quite a bit. He had a strong game. He had 6 passes into the attacking third. And, he got one guy onto a yellow card, and I think it was about 30 seconds, right? He took him one way, took him another way, gets himself a yellow. So just the kind of crafty, smart little stuff that he can bring when he gets an opportunity to play.
Yeah, and I believe that yellow, I'm hoping I'm not going to screw these names up, but I believe that was Fields, who later on, I forget who he fouled, but he almost got a second yellow card in the first half, if I'm remembering correctly.
Fields probably should have been sent off on that second one. To be perfectly honest, though, at that point, the game was still 0-0. I don't really know that you actually want the opponent to go down into 10 men at that point, because you then give them an excuse to, you know, play a 4-4-1 and just sit everybody inside of the 18, which might have been, you know, more of a challenge for them to break down. No, but Hill turned a guy one way, got clipped in the ankle. The guy kind of flipped out about it, and then 30 seconds later the ball comes to him and Hill took him the other way. He fouled him again and he got him a yellow card. So that type of stuff, again, I don't know that people pay too much attention to that, but like you said, you know, picking up fouls five times, mostly in the other team's half, that helps the team keep their momentum going.
For the record, I would have taken the power play in the first half. he did get subbed off at halftime too. I did notice that. They got him out of there quick. He seemed like Fields was seemed like someone who the Revs had the upper hand on too. So it'll be interesting to see if he gets the start in the second game or if they mix things around, because Fields certainly was asking to be sent off. I thought Murillo too in that second half. The referee goes over and has a heart to heart with him, doesn't card him, goes really heart to heart, has about a minute chat with him, and then maybe like 30 seconds later, Murillo goes right back into Chocolate and fouls him and forces his yellow card out. So some pretty good aggression from the home side here. But let's get to some listener questions. Those are our key takeaways. I think we're going to do this in live time. We're getting these questions as they roll in, so these are not very organized. Hopefully they cover everything we want to talk about. Let's start here. Let's start with the goalkeeper. Thoughts on Ravas' questions from Ryan. Thank you for the question, Ryan. Ravas comes away with a clean sheet in his first game. Not really challenged too much. I don't think I learned a whole ton about Ravas tonight, but what do you think, Tom? What was your first impression of him?
Yeah, I mean, he was fine. I mean, like you said, wasn't a whole lot for him to do. There was one moment in the second half where the Revs were, they were caught out a little bit. They only had two guys back, and there was a switch of play from the right side to the left side of the field. Looked like maybe that was going to be an opportunity for Independiente to create a quality chance. And he was quick to come outside of his penalty area and clear the ball away. Other than that, yeah, I mean, not too much to do, for him to do. He didn't make any big mistakes, so yeah, he looked pretty solid in that one moment of a little bit of tension there. He was quick on the spot and cleared the ball away and, resolved that situation.
Yeah, 10 shots for Independiente, two of them on target. I don't remember either of them being too threatening. I remember one shot went wide that I thought maybe Ravas was a little late to react to, but there was really nothing too threatening. They didn't seem like they were able to really get in the box too much. So there's not a ton. I'm not super impressed with Ravas, but did enough. I think if Earl Edwards or Jacob Jackson was in goal tonight, they're still probably coming away with a shutout. So I'll put it that way. TBD for Ravas, and we'll see how he does. I assume he's going to get not challenged that much in the home leg too. I think we'll learn more about him this week against DC United. Let's go to probably the player I'm most negative on, and that's Mark Anthony K. Alden says K is not that good. A couple times there was one time he was just passing in a triangle in the first half and he turned it over, and that led to like a 3-on-2 the other way. Luckily the Revs were able to recover it. I think that led to a shot that Andrew Farrell blocked. He lost another pass at one point that led to a turnover. K, I think, I wasn't too thrilled with his performances last year. Not really thrilled with this performance here. I don't think this is a great first impression from K. What are your thoughts on K? Any disagreement there?
I mean, he was fine. He wasn't, he certainly wasn't horrible. He wasn't spectacular either. He gave the ball away a couple times, sure. But he's 41 of 44 on his passing. So he can, completed 93% of his passes. He was on the ball, a decent amount. He had 10 passes into the final third. He didn't really stand out, but I also didn't see too much to really be concerned about. I don't think he was any better or worse than Polster or Buck when they came into the game either. One thing I think was surprising, just talking to everybody in the Blazing Musket chat over the last couple of days, there's a lot of different combinations of what people think should be out there in those two positions. But I think the one combination that people really weren't counting on was Polster and K, because they're both, a little bit more defensive minded You know, so I was kind of surprised to see that both of them out there at the same time. And I think you kind of see that at times that it, I don't know that you really necessarily need both of them out there at the same time, but yeah, Kay was fine. They weren't really tested all that much. Polster wasn't tested all that much either. And I don't really think either one looked any better or worse than the other.
I should also add too, I have here the 44th minute. Kay had a header that just went off wide. That was a Carlos Heel corner kick. So Kay almost opened the scoring. If he does, maybe we're having a bit of a different conversation. But yeah, so Kay, we won't see him this weekend due to the red card that he earned in the playoffs last year. But I'm guessing we will see him in the home leg at home. I know Ian Harkes and Buck both came on later on. Do you think, who do you think we're going to see this weekend against DC? I guess Buck. I mean, he came straight on for Kay. So I guess if we're going off of that assumption, maybe that's the switch there. But what do you expect to see in the central midfield, or what would you roll with against DC United?
Well, those are two different questions.
Answer both.
I'm assuming that Buck is going to get the start. It'd be interesting to see if he puts Harkes and Buck out there, because that was the other combination that of all the combinations that could be put out there between those four players. Didn't really hear anyone saying that you want Harkes and Buck out there at the same time, but that might end up being what it is. It certainly won't be Kay, obviously, because he's suspended. So maybe Polster tries to go, maybe the first 60 minutes, and he's paired up with Buck, which is, those two out there at the same time is my least preferred pairing. But that's probably what I think it'll be on Saturday. But I would really like to see Harkes start to get, some starts here in the early part of the season.
Mm-hmm. Revenge game for Ian Harkes, by the way, this weekend against DC United. Steve McGrogan, how do we feel about Nick Lima? He also says, did Buck and Esmer get saved for the season opener? We kind of talked about Esmer not getting the start over Nacho. I feel like Buck is probably the same thing, although there's an incentive to play K since he is not playing this weekend. So I think that makes a little bit more sense for why Noel Buck did not start in this game. But getting back to his question about Nick Lima, what were your first impressions of him? Positive, negative? What'd you think?
Not impressed. I thought he struggled quite a bit in the game against Philadelphia last week. We talked about that on the last pod, and I just kind of chalked it up to, well, it's one game from a not so great camera angle in preseason. He held his width really well tonight, which is a human being's ability to occupy space is one skill that most of us have. So he was able to do that. He pushed up high and early in the possession, which allowed Nacho to drift centrally and get on the ball. But when the ball came to him, I don't know. He didn't really do too much with it. He didn't really look too apt to carry the ball forward on the dribble. Some of his passes were a little shaky. You can blame the turf if you want, but when you see other people able to connect 10 and 15 yard passes and he isn't, just not terribly impressed. I think the purpose in acquiring him was that, Bai and Jones are the preferred two outside backs, and he would be someone that would rotate in when needed. But he's potentially going to be needed quite a bit. Kessler is hurt, and it's undetermined as to when he'll be back. Bai isn't going to be back until late summer. Hopefully Lima can kind of build from what is a very low base that he set in the last couple games.
Mm-hmm. It's also too, you mentioned the field. I thought we talked about it a little bit before the show. I don't think it was the greatest pitch in the world, but you could tell some players had some trouble adjusting. And I think most, you mentioned Nick Lima, looked worse than some other players. I think Kay too is another player that had some issues with the pitch. It seemed like some people got their feet under them at some points, but some didn't. And Nick Lima and Mark Anthony Kay were two that kind of stood out to me. Also, Caleb Porter said after the game that the field made things difficult for the Rams.
Come on.
Really, field.
First game. You're going to come out and blame the field. So he's not going to blame injuries, but he's going to blame the field.
Well, Caleb Porter also said that Vrioni had a strain that kept him out a week and a half in preseason. So I don't know the questions there. So I don't know how much of those are blame or how much he was directly asked about. But he did mention that Vrioni had a strain that kept him out a week and a half of preseason. And while we're talking about Vrioni, what were your thoughts about him up top? Obviously, he got the assist on the Shankly goal. But again, he hit the post. He hit the crossbar in the first half, but still no goals from Vrioni. He still does not have a goal in a road game for the Revolution. What were your thoughts on him tonight?
Yeah, look, I mean, he nearly scored. It was a good chance. He got himself into a couple of good positions. Wasn't quite able to get the shot away. The little flick on header that set up the goal, was nicely done. Not an outstanding performance from Ferroni for sure. I actually hadn't realized that he never scored on the road until I saw that before the game started. That might also be in his head, and it could just be one of those things that when he finally does get a roll goal, he can kind of get that, off his back and maybe kind of, relax a little bit in front of goal. Look, not great, not horrible. But like I said last week on the pod, you're not necessarily going to be super reliant on him to score goals. And I think one thing that we saw tonight that was really interesting is that anytime play was building up on the right, Tronkolai was coming in centrally, almost like a second striker coming from a wide position. So that might have been one of the few, wrinkles or whatever you want to call it, that we're seeing in early days here from Porter. So that potentially is going to take a lot of pressure off of him. All he had to do tonight to produce the game-winning goal was slightly notch a ball off the top of his head and knock it on to Tronkolai, who was making a good run from a wide position. So, yeah, not horrible, not great. But he helped get the goal that they needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as I say, I think that, we had this issue with Buxo where he kept hitting the crossbar when he first came over. And, I know on the score sheet, it's, a miss is a miss. But that was a pretty solid header. And that's a part of a game that I've criticized before. So for him to get an early chance, certainly was promising. Still seems a little bit behind. His runs still seem a little bit off, but it was nice to see him contribute. He had 4 shots tonight, none of them on target, but it did hit the post. 21 touches in 76 minutes. Did have 2 passes into the final third. Was dispossessed once. Thought he was fine tonight. Will be interesting to see if he's able to get on the board at home in the home leg while they're playing weaker competition. We did get a comment here from Bubba Dubs. He says Ferroni was half a step away from some of those crosses. He needs to anticipate those. Played positive and was way better than Bobby Wood. We still lack depth up top. I thought Bobby Wood was fine. And Bobby Wood is no good for opposition defenses. We learned that from the commentary tonight. That's going to be said a lot on this podcast.
Yeah. The substitution to put Bobby on the field just for that comment alone was worth it. Just going back to Ferroni, he only attempted 8 passes. So, Porter had identified, he kind of contradicted himself, actually. He said that Ferroni, is capable and pretty good at holding the ball up, and then turned right around and said, but it's something that he can still improve on, which I think is a very nice way of saying he's actually not good at holding the ball up. There was one time tonight where the ball came to him, came into his feet. He had at least two, if not 3 options to just simply knock the ball back and then spin out and make a run. And instead he kept the ball turned and was going at basically their entire back four all by himself. I don't know that that's really an effective approach for most strikers to turn and go at the entirety of another team's back four with little to no support. So hopefully that's something that Porter can identify and show that clip to him. Like, look, when we're talking about holding the ball up and laying it off, this is what we're talking about. You've got Nacho and Carlos behind you. Knock it back to them. Spin out, make a run, and they can get you the ball in a better position. So, he wasn't out there for too long, and I thought he was fine. But again, good, but not great, but not horrible.
Mm-hmm. Paulo said, I thought Heal and Ferroni looked rusty, but I guess some rust was to be expected. Are you disappointed we won by only 1? We talked about at the beginning of the podcast. I think Ferroni, you can kind of say, again, not a world-class performance, but I thought Carlos Heal did have a pretty solid game overall. He had a couple of through balls that were set up nicely. And again, if Nacho Heal is able to handle that pass in the first half and is able to slide it past the keeper, then the Revs have a goal in the first half as well as the second. We're talking about a 2-0 game. This is a lot more of a comfortable margin. I think Carlos had a pretty solid game overall, maybe not the world-class, 8 key passes type of game, but 5 chances created, 70 for 77 passes. That's 91%. He almost set up K on that corner kick, 15 passes into the final third, 4 for 4 on dribbles, I'm just looking through the stats here. I thought he actually had a very, very solid game. 5 for 6 on ground duels. So I disagree with Paulo on Carlos Hill, but I get kind of the Vrioni comments there that he looked a little bit rusty. Anything to add on Carlos before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, if that's a rusty night for Carlos, then you should be really happy about that. He put Nacho in for what was nearly a goal. He almost slipped him in earlier as well. The ball was, just cut out, almost got through to Nacho making another, a nice little short little run in behind the back line. If that's an off night for him, great. Because that means that there's a lot more to come, and we'll have plenty more of the Carlos that we're used to.
Yep. 0 assists from Carlos Hill tonight. Terrible. Joe asks, while we're on Vrioni, will Vrioni still be the 9 at season's end? A mid-season replacement is probably difficult to do, but I have seen enough. And then he also sends a photo of Andrew Farrell in the Farrell hat, which is a very good meme. Andrew Farrell. If you were listening to the commentary, you know about Andrew Farrell. I don't need to explain Andrew Farrell. It's kind of fitting because Andrew is always very happy. But let's get back to the question. Will Vrioni still be the number 9 at season's end? That's a very good question. The Revs are collecting GAM, and we'll talk about that. They made a trade today. They're collecting GAM. It seems like they are not going to be stagnant in the middle of the summer. So if Vrioni struggles, I wouldn't be shocked if they go out and they make an improvement. I think they probably should have looked at getting another striker of some sort this past season. But I think they're giving Vrioni a chance here at the beginning of the year. And if he's not going to be able to do it, I wouldn't be shocked if they go out and get a midseason replacement. So it really comes down to, is he going to convert and is he going to be a difference maker? And I'm not so sold on it. I don't know if you're able to get Vrioni off the roster or if it's going to be kind of like a situation where you just, bench him and eat it and bring in someone else. But they should have a TAM level signing type of ability to make in the middle of the year or so. And I think if you're going to make that type of signing, it is a striker. So I'll put the odds on, I'll slightly lean no that Vrioni is the number 9 at the end of the season. Do you want to take a bet on that one, Tom?
No, I mean, look, this guy has seen enough and okay, but Kurt Arnolfo hasn't, and Kurt is big on him. So, there seems to be some way to go in convincing in Kurt and Porter that they need to look for, another alternative. And that's the easy part. The easy part is, okay, we need to bring somebody else in. Okay. So if they acquire some, if they acquire some MLS crypto, maybe they can make that happen. But moving him on, this is the conundrum that they have. People can talk, well, we need to get rid of him. Okay. You're currently going to move him on for nothing because no one will take him for the money that he's currently on. So if he starts to do well, you're not going to want to get rid of him. And then people might want him. And if he continues to do poorly, people are going to continue not to want him. So you're stuck with him because he makes a lot of money. So again, I spent a lot of time talking about one player. But that's basically what it is in a nutshell. You should, however sold you are that you've seen enough and this guy is, he's not going to make it and so on and so forth. It is in your best interest as a Revs fan that he does make it and does do well. That is the best case scenario. And I think he's going to get every opportunity to prove that because of the money that they've invested in him.
It's certainly tough to get him off of the roster. So you're not going to be able to bring in another designated player. So that's going to be the issue of where are you going to get that upgrade? Because if it's going to be a TAM level player, it's not going to be so cut and dry. We did get one more question here on Locomotive Crayon Flag FC. Porter has effectively hitched his cart to Vrioni for better or worse. Big statements of support. No reinforcements at striker. Big hole there last year, etc. A bold move. Based on what we saw this evening, how do we see that playing out this season? I feel like we just answered that.
Big hole last season.
There was a big hole at striker last season.
Yeah, they started out very well. Bo couldn't stay fit.
Yeah, but Bo's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's Vrioni and Wood. And Wood had a bit of a hot streak last year. Vrioni has games. He looks fine. Vrioni has games where he looks great. But he also has a lot of games where, no road goals. So it's going to be a matter of if he's able to lock in that consistency. And I don't know. I just haven't seen it. It's been a year and a half. We're still waiting on it. I'm not confident.
Having a team feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 422 through 428. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's toilet bowl cleaner disinfects both the toilet brush and bowl for 2-in-1 disinfection, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Where else are we going to go? Someone made a comment. Sean Clay yelled at Esmir for not passing to him and then apologized after he got subbed off. I didn't see that. I was probably reading through departed quotes. Did you notice that at all, that Sean Clay was a little feisty with Esmir? I didn't realize that.
No, who cares? They're professional athletes. No, but really, like, they're professional athletes. Like, occasionally they want the ball and they don't get it and they express that to their teammate. And I would imagine 99 times out of 100, they move on. And you could probably ask both of them about that tomorrow. And they'd be like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Glad he apologized. That's a nice guy.
Yeah. Hill does that quite a bit. You know, he just has this look on his face. Like, how do you not understand that that's where you needed to run? But I mean, this is their job. You know, they traveled, 2,300 miles to play this game. So, you know, yeah, you get frustrated sometimes when you're at work.
Oh, I know I do. got a ton of questions about the commentary. Josh says, who the hell was doing the commentary? He says it was distracting. It was distracting, but it was awesome. I'll get the name of the commentator here in a second. Amazing commentary. We also got another question here from Justin's iPhone. Was this the greatest commentator performance of all time? Freestyle rapping, Mitt Romney, Miami Sports, The Departed, and Andrew Farrell. The list goes on and on. And also Trey says, any relationship between Dave Romney and Massachusetts Republican senator / presidential candidate Mitt Romney? Phenomenal performance from the commentary. At first, I think it was a little not annoying, but a little confusing. Got Sergio Dip vibes of what exactly is happening here. But as it went on, I assume he was in on the jokes a little bit. I don't know if he was checking Twitter and realized that he was absolutely crushing it, but I was cracking up in the second half. I enjoyed him bringing up family ties when Ian Harkes was coming on, and he mentioned, oh, Nacho and Carlos are brothers, and he paused, and just that pause, that was perfect comedic timing because everyone was just hanging on the, like, waiting for the Mitt Romney reference, and he delivered. Perfect commentary performance. I wish he did every single game. And I have the urge to watch The Departed. I gotta admit, I think I'm gonna watch it tomorrow while we wait for the next DC game. Any commentary on the commentary?
I thought it was pretty good. You know, I mean, the only getting Farrell's name wrong, that's kind of annoying. The rest of it, it's fine. Look, this is a guy talking to himself for the better part of 2 hours. If I had to talk to myself for 2 hours, I don't even know where that conversation would go. I might start talking about how, you know, money creation and how banks, transact money between each other. I mean, the rabbit holes that you can go down in a 2 hour conversation with yourself are, he was good. He was entertaining. You know, I do appreciate the, not being lectured to about what we're supposed to be thinking about the soccer game that we typically get, quite often from the analyst that just sits there and just tells us what we should think about everything. I'd much rather have just one guy just winging it, making references, checking Wikipedia in real time to see if Dave Romney is actually related to Mitt Romney. Yeah, this is great.
That's the funniest part, is that there's one Tubi employee that's sitting next to him, and he, at one point in the first half, he slipped a piece of paper to him that said Mitt Romney is a distant cousin of Dave Romney, or David Romney, as he was saying. That I also thought there was one point too that he said Andrew Farrell's name correctly, and then went right back to Andrew Farrell. So I don't know if he misspoke and accidentally said his name correctly, or if he said it correctly and then somehow became aware of the joke and then went back to Andrew Farrell. There's layers on top of this commentary tonight, but it was phenomenal.
Yeah, I would like to get to the bottom of how that happened, because you get everyone else's names correctly. You know, he was pretty emphatic with his chunkalies. He was really like,
he got Esmer's name right.
Yeah, right. Like,
well, David Romney. I thought David Romney was incredible. Yeah, you do get a pronunciation sheet when with the game notes. So I don't know if just he skipped over Andrew Farrell or if that was just a running gag that he thought was funny, and it was. But you also hit the nail on the head. 2 hours of talking by yourself is not fun. You're going to go a little bit crazy. You're going to go a little bit delusional. If I had to talk for 2 hours on this show and I was just doing a 2-hour solo podcast, it would end in me freestyle rapping. And that's why I bring on people to make sure I don't get into hip hop. So, but yeah, phenomenal performance. Fingers crossed that he will be doing commentary next week. Yeah, great job. I'll look up his name too here. I want to give him full credit so everyone can follow him on Twitter. Porter, last question here. In your opinion, how will the Revs blow it next Thursday? A nice pessimistic question to end the game, to end the podcast. I can't see them blowing this game Thursday. Famous last words, but I think there's a talent difference. I think this is a long flight up for Independiente. I think this was the leg for the Revs to quote unquote struggle, and they seem to be in control of this game really from the 10th minute on. I can't envision them blowing this in any way, shape, or form. I'm aware this clip is going to be cut and posted on Twitter if this is wrong, but I expect the Revs to win by multiple goals next week. And outside of Philadelphia Union Andre Blake bizarro own goal like we saw yesterday, I can't envision the Revs even conceding, let alone somehow coming out of this on the wrong side of the scoreline. So I'll take my chances here and say no chance that they blow this. 0.0001 chance they blow this.
They should be fine. They were able to get out of there with a result. Like you said, having been the ones that had to do all the travel, now Independiente is going to come all, making even a longer trip. They're going from Panama all the way up to New England, right? The Revs are only traveling from Florida. So they saved themselves, 800-900 miles. It should be. Why be pessimistic now?
We're Revs fans. We're Revs fans. Like, we're always pessimistic. Come
on. Like, it's February. It's 15 degrees outside. Like, there's plenty of other things to be miserable about.
Well, I after the last Champions League performance where they blew a 3-0 lead at Pumas, I do not blame the pessimism. But I think for this one, they should be good. There really should not be any sort of hiccups next week. And I can tell myself, I feel myself jinxing it. The only way they blow it is if I jinx this so hard that they end up screwing up two bizarro own goals. By the way, George D. Metellus, I hope I'm saying that. If I'm not saying his name correctly, I don't think he can hold it against me. But I believe George D. Metellus at GD Metellus 8. Go follow him on Twitter if you are on Twitter right now. Any other things you want to talk about in the game? We covered, I think, everything. The only thing I could really want to add is Andrew Farrell and David Romney. Very solid in the back. I think I kind of skimmed over that kind of quickly, but really strong defensive game, which I think has been a bit of a, I don't want to say a question mark, but with Henry Kessler out, it was certainly good to see Farrell and Romney have a strong game to start off the year. Outside of that, I don't have anything else game-wise to talk about. Anything you wanted to add here before we move on?
Well, talking about Farrell and Romney, you know, they looked really good. They looked good together, and they played together quite a bit last season. The only thing that is potentially a little bit concerning is, you know, if Kessler isn't able to participate Saturday or next Thursday, or maybe even the Saturday after that, you know, that's a bit of a tricky situation for them to navigate with Farrell and Lima. You know, I don't think you can really ask Farrell to play four games between now and next Sunday. So hopefully Kessler is able to at least make an appearance. You know, maybe it's maybe a half an hour on Saturday, and then maybe they can try and get him close to the full game on the second leg of this thing next Thursday. That's really the only concern. You know, Romney looked solid and unbothered by anything as always. I thought Farrell, you know, people like to criticize Farrell. I thought Farrell actually picked out several really nice passes where, again, you know, Lima was given width on the right, and he was able to play some split passes and get the ball into the center, you know, in particular get it in a nacho a couple times. I thought the two of them looked really good, and it's just a matter of, you know, can they get through these four games and get Kessler back involved somewhere along the way? Otherwise, you know, that could be a little tricky. And, you know, hopefully Lima starts to look a little bit better as time goes on.
Before we move on to the end of the podcast and we wrap up here today, there was a trade today. I want to touch on it very fast. Tom, you can space out if you don't want to talk about MLS crypto. But we did get some questions about it before the game. The Revs traded two international roster spots to the LA Galaxy, and they received $350,000 worth of general allocation money. And we got some questions about what exactly that means, why they would do such a thing. And we've skimmed over the offseason, but not a whole lot happened, so we weren't covering a ton of things that happened over the offseason. But there have been a number of kind of minor trades the Revs have done. They traded Jordan Adebayo-Smith to Minnesota, and they received $125,000 worth of GAM. They received $100,000 of GAM for their first and third super draft picks. They also traded GAM $75,000 in 2024 GAM and $100,000 in 2025 GAM to Charlotte for an international slot. They got $150,000 worth of GAM for discovery rights for two players. And today they make $350,000 worth of GAM from two international roster slots. Every team gets eight international roster slots. Basically they're for players that are not domestic or they don't have a green card. Some players like Carlos Gil and Giacomo Vrioni have received a green card and they no longer occupy an international roster spot. Basically, these moves are done when you're not going to use an international roster spot. And I haven't done a complete roster breakdown, but I don't think so. They've traded three away. I think they have five internationals on the roster, so they don't have any extra to trade. But essentially, these are assets they're not using. And basically, they're receiving allocation money back. What does allocation money do? The short of it, essentially, is it basically expands your cap. If you didn't listen to my salary budget podcast from last summer, where I talked about what the Revs outlook looked like going into the summer window, the way I kind of look at it is your salary budget plus your GAM plus your TAM, that equals about $10 million in assets you can spend. So the Revs here have acquired, I think it was around $900,000 worth of GAM. I'd have to do the math. But essentially what that is doing is it's expanding your cap 8 or 9%. So essentially the Revs are creating cap space. And even though they don't have an international roster spot, assuming they don't go out and acquire another international roster spot, or assuming that they don't move on from one of their current international players, it's probably going to be a domestic player, but they do have some room to go out and make a big splash in the summer. So we had some questions about what exactly this move means, why they would do these moves, and are they limiting themselves by trading international roster spots. I do think it does limit them a little bit if they wanted to look internationally, but they can always trade for one midseason if there's a team not using one, or as I say, get rid of someone off of their roster to create that spot. So, but essentially it's just creating extra cap space, and I won't dig into too much more details before I bore everyone, including Tom. Sorry, Tom.
Look, it is good. If you're not going to use the international spots and someone else wants to, you know, trade you what is effectively cap space, I think that makes a lot of sense. And they still have one senior roster spot open, so that means they could potentially, you know, they could bring a player in without having to send anybody back out. And if they've got cap space to play around with, you know, maybe they wait around until July and see if any, you know, American, you know, any U.S. players or players with a green card become available, you know, when the European and most other leagues around the world, you know, their seasons end and contracts come up. Or maybe they look for a team that, you know, slips outside of playoff contention, as hard as that is to do, by July, and, you know, and try and bring somebody else in there. So I think it's smart. I mean, Porter's in his first year, so now he's got an open roster spot. He's got some cap space to play around with. So I think when he gets to the point where he feels like he can identify what the team, you know, what the team needs, then, it, you know, it sounds like they have a good ability to go out and acquire it. You know, there's a lot of players, if you look at the salaries that come out once a year from the MLS Players Association, you know, there's a good amount of players that could potentially fit into, you know, having that much, you know, 900,000. There's a decent amount of players that could fit into that salary level. So yeah, I think it's good to have options for them to go out and get the type of player that they think they need to get.
And them pursuing Albert Elise and that kind of falling through, that looked like that was going to be a TAM level type of signing. So we already know they have that type of money. They're adding money on top of it. And the other thing that they can do, because you mentioned the one roster spot, the other thing you could do is you can accumulate GAM. And then if you need to ship out a player that is just doing nothing on your roster, you can throw some GAM, attach that to the player kind of as a poison pill. It's not really the best thing to do to pay to get a player off your roster. But if you need the roster space, you know, attach $250,000 to, I'll just throw out a name, Tommy McNamara, who doesn't exactly have any major role on this team. Attach $250,000 or $300,000 worth of GAM to send him out, get the roster spot. There's it adds some creativity for the summer window. And right now there's not a lot of creativity on the roster space. So at least they have the creativity money-wise. I will say we did get some comments from people that wanted me to do a podcast kind of projecting where the team was money-wise, cap space-wise, like I did in the summer last year. It didn't make sense to do that this year in the winter because salaries change. It's a lot easier when we get the MLS salary data. So I will do that in the summer when we get the MLS salary data to kind of project where the team is. So some people have an idea to what to expect going into the summer window. But right now, I would have had to have made too many assumptions and guesses at what it was. And I didn't want to go down that path. So
But there's no way to really know, is there, like what they actually have in terms of cap space? And no, like, I really wish they would make that all of it. I think it would actually make talking about MLS a lot more interesting if you could sit here and say, okay, because you can do this with the NBA, right? You can talk about very specifically, this is how much roster space they have. This is the type of contract that this player is eligible for. They have this guy, they have his bird rights. You know, all this stuff is known, and I think that creates a lot of, especially around like trade deadline time, there's a lot of interesting conversations that you can have, whereas here it seems like you might be able to get the salary half, but the other half of it, you know, you're totally in the dark.
Yeah, and you know, you can take the MLS salary data, but there are still like agent fees and stuff like that that sometimes might not be reflected in that data, and those kind of tie into the equation. It used to be, I don't know if this is still the case, but GAM rolled over. I assume it is, but you don't know how much GAM rolls over year to year, how much TAM rolls over year to year. So there's a bit of a mystery there in terms of, you know, allocation money. I'll have to reread all the rules because the rules, of course, change year to year to add on to the complexity of it. But you can kind of guesstimate kind of the situation teams are in. If you follow everything and you look at every trade and everything, you can kind of get an educated guess on where to go. And so I'll try to do that again this year. But like you said, there's salaries change year to year. We don't know what Kessler's salary figure is coming into this year because he just signed a new contract. So we don't know what Sean Calais is a designated player, so we know what his cap hit is. But you know, any player that's new, Jonathan Mensah, we don't know what his salary figure is. We don't know what Kessler's figure is. We don't know what Ravas's figure is. There's a number of variables that we would essentially just be throwing, you know, random number out there. So it's too complicated at this point. But once the MLS releases their salary data, and I will say too, it's a lot more transparent than where it used to be. It used to be that when a player would be traded, it was for an unknown amount of allocation money. So at least we know what players are going for these days. I remember, I think it was Charlie Davies was traded to Philadelphia, and we for allocation money. It wasn't known exactly what they got for him. You know, same thing with when we traded for Kai Kamara. No idea what we spent to get Kai Kamara that year. So that was a rule change. So hopefully MLS goes in that direction, and at some point it is transparent and we get to see everything. Apparently Miami was in cap hell a couple of weeks ago and they weren't compliant, which is so unlike them. But you know, they had to sell off a player to become cap compliant before the season start date. So that's something that MLS GMs know, but you know, if Tom Bogart of The Athletic doesn't report it, we have no idea. So I also think a lot of people are interested in that type of stuff now. And as MLS grows, I think people want to know, you know, what to expect from their teams. So hopefully someday we get more transparency from MLS, but I highly, highly, highly doubt that. So with that being said, I should also note some changes in the show coming into this year. Tom, you and Andy Judd are going to be joining the show as co-hosts this year. So Sean and I are very excited to have you on. So I think the four of us mostly primarily will be on the show throughout the year, post-game, any other extra podcasts. The Blazing Musket does plan on doing their Apple TV interviews throughout the year. So those will be done probably more so in the summer when the schedule kind of gets a little bit more evened out, not with this congestion early on, but we expect them to do some more of that as well. So big things happening here, very exciting things. And one other thing, I think last year, one of the more frustrating things about this show was we're on five or six different platforms. And we used to go and ask, you know, for questions on every single platform. And truth be told, it just got too much. We started missing questions. It was too much to go everywhere. So we're going to probably, for the time being, just stick to Twitter or X for listener questions, which is where I would say 90% of our questions come from. So if you are on another platform and you would like to send in a question, get on Twitter. If you don't want to be on Twitter, you can email us at revolutionrecap@gmail.com. Anytime throughout the week, we'll see that question. Hopefully before we record for a post-game podcast like this, we probably won't do that, but you can email us at revolutionrecap@gmail.com if you have a question. But outside of that, I think we're going to be sticking to Twitter and see how that works. And if people revolt, maybe we'll change it. But for now, it's 11:23 right now, going on five different platforms and responding to questions and making sure I got every single question. Got to be too much. So those are the housekeeping notes that we will leave you with here as we start our 2024 season. Tom, before we go, I should ask, do you have a favorite quote from The Departed?
I think the one where I think it's right in the beginning of the movie where they shoot the guy and the woman in the back of the head, and he says, "Oh, she fell funny." That's probably my most of what is said in that movie is not repeatable, but you know what it is? It's he asks him, he's like, "Who are you?" And he's like, "I'm the guy who does his job. You must be the other guy."
Yes.
I've used that before. Doesn't go over too well, but it's, yeah, that's a good one too. Yeah.
Do you say that at work? Is that why it doesn't go over well? Man, no wonder you have so many arguments at work. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Jeez. Shankly is the employee of the year compared to you, Tom. I actually tweeted that one out. I was going through Departed quotes, and most of them I can't say. I'll tweet them out, but I won't say on the podcast because I'll have to add an explicit tag. And I don't want it to get a little too R-rated. I know we already had that with the RIFC podcast a few weeks
ago. Yeah, you already threatened to jump Don Garber. So
he does hate America. See what he's doing? Oh, should we talk about the Open Cup? Only eight teams. Do you have a reaction? Meh.
Which eight teams?
I don't actually know.
Just random draw out of a hat?
I don't know. I think it's the one with the least schedule congestion. I don't know. It's all very stupid. Just send your reserve teams. Why do you need to make a show of it?
That's how you qualify for a cup now?
I don't know.
Your schedule is one of the eight least congested.
You're not doing anything, Vancouver. Go play in the U.S. Open. Oh, I guess it wouldn't be Vancouver. Oh, that was a stupid boy. That was dumb. Colorado, go play in the U.S. Open Cup. I don't know. Apparently, for those that don't know, apparently over the weekend, news broke that MLS essentially was holding the U.S. Open Cup hostage and threatened to withdraw. And as a result, USSF was wondering if it was even worth playing which did not sit well with many USL teams. Hopefully the US Open Cup stays. We like the US Open Cup, but truth be told, I think it's at the point now where for MLS, it's the lowest priority on the schedule. But just send, you know, all these MLS teams have reserve teams at this stage. Just send your reserve kids. You don't need to make it a rule. Just
they do it anyway.
Let the teams decide. Just let the teams decide what teams they want to roll out.
I mean, I went to the Pittsburgh game. Yeah, I went to the Pittsburgh game last year, and it's like, this is Revs 2 anyway. So what, you know, no offense to anyone that played in that game. But, you know, it's like, what's the difference? Mm-hmm. Right? They should just tell them, look, guys, just do what you get. Do what everyone else, do what they do in England, right? England has two cups. God, can you imagine? You know, they have two cups, and, you know, they just tell them, look, you know, do whatever you want for that League Cup game in August. So if you get yourself knocked out of it quick enough, no one will even know that you're in it. And then, you know, if you get to the quarterfinals, semifinals, okay, fine. Then you want to take it seriously. Like, it's not that hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we actually, I plug our Jeff Lorenowitz interview from a few years ago, but he played on a few different teams. And I remember we asked him, said, how seriously is the US Open Cup taken? And like, did that change from team to team? And I remember, I'd have to go look up the exact quote, but he said, you know, some take it really seriously and some win a couple of games and you kind of look around and you're like, yeah, I guess we're going for it now. So I think there's kind of a different kind of feeling throughout the league. But, you know, if you're one of these bottom teams, you know, you're going for it. Like, why wouldn't you go for it? If you were, I don't know, Chicago Fire, you know, and you're having a miserable season, you know, wouldn't you want a good run in the US Open Cup? I mean, what else would you play for? So maybe they should push US Open Cup later in the year so the bottom feeder teams actually have something to care about midseason instead of just, you know, riding it out and waiting for them to miss the playoffs. But I don't know. The whole thing is
or you know, it is. Or, you know, God forbid that they you know, they can look at the FA Cup, right? The FA Cup third round every year. You know, the Premier League takes a break for that weekend, and it, you know, they make the FA Cup third round the centerpiece of that weekend, and that's when, you know, that's when all the Premier League teams come into the competition. So I feel like if MLS really wanted to, they could have done something like that. They could have done something to embrace it and make a big deal about it, you know, and give a weekend over you know, to the US Open Cup. They also could have tried to say, hey, look, you know, we're not really happy with how this gets broadcast and packaged, you know, gets packaged and all this other stuff. Okay, then fine. Then bring it, you know, bring it in-house to Apple, which is, you know, they're trying to suck every single form of soccer in this country into that one medium. So bring the US Open Cup in there and have your, you know, they've got, what, 80 personalities that are employed by Apple now. So, you know, bring them in, get them on the broadcast. They really could have done something to turn this around. But instead, they've decided that they're just going to try and kill it off. They're going to act like they're above it. They went and invented a tournament that nobody wanted, nobody asked for, nobody really cares about. I mean, you want to talk about a tournament that nobody cares about until they get to the semifinal. The League's Cup is the textbook definition of a tournament that no one cares about until it's like, oh, well, okay, I guess we're still here and whatever this thing is. And the only reason you don't want to get knocked out of the League's Cup is that if you get knocked out, you don't have a game to play for 3 weeks. I mean, it's like, anyway.
I like League's Cup. I actually did not hate League's Cup. I didn't hate it. It was fine.
Did you sit in Gillette Stadium?
No.
Did you sit in your own stadium and listen and like they acted like we were the away team?
Mm-hmm.
It was the stupidest thing that I have ever seen. Everyone here is 90% of the people here are a Revs fan. It's in Gillette, right? The fort wasn't cheering for the other team, and we're gonna sit here and pretend like we're in Mexico. I'm
not saying it wasn't stupid. I'm saying I enjoyed it. Big difference. I will also say this. I think we figured out how to save the US Open Cup. Here's what you do. People are worried about viewership, ratings, not generating enough money. Here's what you do. You give the US Open Cup to Tubi. And every single game is commentated by George D. Matillis.
Yes.
And every game, he freestyle raps. Every single person would turn into Vermont Green versus FC Tulsa or whatever if you have George D. Matillis, the greatest play-by-play commentator ever, on every single U.S. Open Cup game. It could be at 5 in the morning. You're going to get sky-high ratings. More people will watch that. then it would be must-see TV. It would appeal to all ages, all demographics. It would bring in fans to watch
soccer. It would unite the country.
It would create world peace. So
we would just find all of our differences just don't really matter anymore.
Yes.
And they would all just melt away.
We would all unite behind George D. Metellus.
It's a great name.
It's a phenomenal name.
And did you say it correctly?
I don't have any idea.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe he's had his name pronounced incorrectly so many times in his life that every time he does a game at random, he just picks a player and says, this guy is going to experience my life for the next 90 minutes. And I'm going to intentionally pronounce his name incorrectly.
And I'm going to make sure everyone knows David Romney is related to Mitt. That's the other thing. Devious scheme. Let's wrap this up. It's getting late. It's 11:30. It's past our bedtime. We're at about an hour. It's getting into a crazy season. You can follow us on Twitter or X or whatever at Revolution Recap. Also follow us Revolution Recap on Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, Facebook, anything. We're there. So make sure you go follow us on social media. Be sure to follow our friends over at the Blazing Musket as well at Blazing Musket on Twitter, and make sure you subscribe to their Substack to receive every piece of news in your email inbox, whether or not it's a free or paid subscription. Also be sure to follow our friends at the Rebellion, on Twitter, or go to anyrebellion.org to learn more about them and how you can become a member for the 2024 season. And of course, thank you to our presenting sponsor, Bet Online. Remember to use our promo code BLEAVE for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. And of course, make sure you are subscribed on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you are listening. And if you could please rate and review us 5 stars, it will help people looking for Revolution content find it all year long. Although I think we might be converting to a George D. Metellus podcast after this episode. Forget the Revs. Forget Frioni, forget Caleb Porter. We're all about George D. Metellus. So we'll be back following the weekend game against DC United, the MLS opener. Hopefully George D. Metellus is on the call, but regardless if he is or not, we will be here. So until then, thank you everyone for listening, and go Revs.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.